Welcome, vinylers and vinylettes, to this episode of the Aberdeen Vinyl Records Podcast. This week's guest is somebody who knows more musicians than I'll ever know, and somebody who's a fantastic musician himself. He was in a very well-known new wave band back in the day, and since then he's really continued to develop as a musician and as a person, and been involved in so many really brilliant projects. And without further ado, or as usual, a little bit of ado, I'm going to pass you over to Lee, who's going to tell us a little bit more.
So, today we're going to be talking to a man who played in Sham 69 in Chelsea, who is the only man that could have pulled the following names together for just one album. One very special album. The list is genuinely so impossibly long, I can't list it all. There's about 240 plus artists that have committed to dedicating themselves to this album. I'm serious, he's managed to pull musicians from bands such as Iron Maiden, Madness, The Smiths, The Yardbirds, The Specials, Soft Cell, Curved Ear, Die Toten Hosen, Nine Below Zero, The Raincoats, Sham 69, UK Sub, Spirit of Destiny, Judge Dredd, The Fall, The Body Snatchers, X-Ray Specs, Girls School, Hawkwind, and even more. He even got Afrika Bambaataa. It's ridiculous. But there's really only one person that can explain this in a way that makes real sense. That's the man himself. Welcome, Matt Sargent. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm all right. How are you?
Can you hear us all right, yeah?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Excellent stuff. So, Matt, hi, I'm Lee. I'm the one that spoke to you last night. Hope you're well, buddy. Great to see you.
Great to have you on board.
Hi, I'm Bob. I work with Lee.
Nice one, Bob. Good to see you.
Well, he says that, but I work for him, so... great to have you here.
It's all a cooperative.
Absolutely. Absolutely, my man. So you're all happy and well today, buddy, yeah?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Yeah, went to the dentist yesterday, so I just recovered from that. But apart from that, everything's all right. Yeah.
It's our least favorite place to go. Bob was there. What were you last week?
Was I was it? There 2 weeks ago.
Two weeks ago. Yeah. Still looking behumbled by it.
Still traumatized.
Yeah, definitely.
And they said Nam was hell.
No, that was the enam.
The enamel was hell.
So funny. Well, first of all, do you know something? There is one weird question I'd really like to ask you.
Go on then.
How many people's hair have you cut? And what the hell is that all about? Like, seriously.
Well, my first job when I left school was a hairdresser.
Is that right? Is that what sort of genuinely is? You've got the background then?
Yeah, I mean, my mum was a hairdresser as well. So when I left school, it was the first job I applied for and I got it. So I kind of learned how to cut hair there. So it came in handy on the road. From the videos.
Well, this is it. I was watching and I'm like, this is such a bizarre thing that you do this. I don't know if you've heard of Bob Mortimer from Vic and Bob, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's another one exactly the same. There's heaps of footage, heaps of photos, heaps of stories about all these people that Bob Mortimer's hair, people whose hair he's cut in the past, and he's done some hack jobs and he's done some grand masterpieces as well. So I just wondered that there's something about this that's just, I might be missing. I don't know. Maybe you guys own a barber together or something. I'm sure.
It'll come in handy during COVID, though.
Absolutely. Well, look, he's got a better haircut than both of us do, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
Charlie Harper was a hairdresser as well.
Was he an actual hairdresser?
He was, yeah. He had the salon in Tooting, and I think the subs started rehearsing in the hairdressers in the early days.
Subs started rehearsing in the hairdressers. Well,
yeah.
Another exclusive.
Look at him. Brilliant UK subs. Fantastic.
Yeah.
No way. So that doesn't make sense for one reason, because Stevie's got a terrible hairdo.
Well,
me for saying that.
I was not listening.
No, I'm only joking. The pink punk is a beautiful, beautiful man.
I think when you cut people's hair, they turn into the personality of the haircut, you know. So it's funny. It's funny you cut people's hair and they just change it into a different person.
Does that mean you could pick somebody and just give them a skinhead and then put them out and watch them roll?
Skinhead, a pair of Dr. Martens on you go, boys.
I always say, if in doubt, off with the sides.
Yeah.
Oh, makes sense.
Magic. He says.
So UK subs and Sham 69. Is that you've been involved with Sham 69?
Sham 69 and Chelsea.
And Chelsea, of course. Yeah, Chelsea was your first band, was it?
Yeah, I mean, I played in a few other bands before Chelsea, but Chelsea's the probably the first name band I played for. I was played with them for about 3 years, from 91 to 94.
Yeah.
And then I played with Sham from 95 to 2007, I think it was.
Yeah.
So you must have been doing all these, as well as new stuff. I'm sure you were probably doing some of the old big hits, were you? Hurry Up, Harry, and...
Oh yeah, we did all the classics, and when we did new albums, we did a couple of new songs off the album, as you usually do.
Yeah,
usually the old classics, fantastic. People's favourites.
Hurry Up, I remember being at school when Hurry Up, Harry came on the radio, and we just all looked at each other and go, "My God, normal people are on the radio."
Yeah, totally.
They're just talking like we talk, you know.
That was funny. I was just chatting to Jimmy a couple of days ago, actually, about the song we did called Swampy. We did that as a single. And I was chatting to him about a friend called me up and said, "Oh, I'm listening to you on the radio." I said, "Oh, I'm cracking up." And it was a song called Swampy.
Brilliant.
Brilliant stuff.
So what do you think of what was punk to you when back I'm talking about back in the day? So were you joining a band, or were you joining part of a scene, or what was actually happening for you? Because sometimes when there's a movement and you're in the middle of that zone, you're part of it and you're less aware of it. So I just wondered, like, what was your decision making? Were you joining a band? Were you breaking free? Were you becoming a rebel? Were you being punk? And if so, what was punk to you then?
I think I was already part of a scene that was going on. And I think just getting in a band was just kind of like a natural progression. I wanted to be in a band from the age of 14, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
So it was just hanging around and meeting the right people, meeting different musicians, and then finally getting in a band. I mean, my first band was at school. I had some school friends, so I started at school.
Were you playing guitar to begin with?
I was actually taught on cello.
So okay, that makes sense, actually.
I was classically trained at school. My dad was a cellist, he wanted me to be classically trained, and also it gave him the chance to play on the cello that he'd learned on. So I brought it home. And then, it was kind of like the four string natural progression onto double bass. And that was a real pain in the arse getting that on the bus home from school. You know,
there it was. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So
and that cello.
You must have come with some comments. You must have received comments for that, surely, no?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, oh my God. People used to take the right mick out of me. Yeah. Will you join the Stray Cats? Or yeah.
That's a good shout.
Totally. what do you think of the state of punk today? Are you happy with it? Are you upset by it? Do you think it lives on, or how?
I'm happy with it. Punk lives on. You know, I mean, you know, a lot of the original punks think that anything after 78 was post-punk. You know, it's great that it's still happening. You know, 45 years later, there's punk bands are still going, and new punk bands are cropping up, which is, it's all healthy and it's good. It's keeping the scene alive. So yeah, I think it's great. Yeah,
I mean, certainly we seem to experience a hell of a success. I mean, old school punk is alive. It's well, it's kicking, screaming and shouting. It really is. And
in the record shop.
Absolutely.
Well, we sell loads of punk. We're always asked for punk.
But equally, the value of them seems to be higher than the average. And I mean, we're talking about, so there's different ways of selling it at a record. You get it in, you buy in collections, you get it in. But before you put it out onto the shelves, you take photographs and put it up on social media. And then all of a sudden you've got, you're inundated with messages. So the album sold before you could put it out on your shop floor. You effectively never had it. And none of your customers ever saw it unless you were quick enough to go on social media.
That's very
which is
true.
Really interesting.
You kind of wish you could get maybe like eight or nine copies of old punk records, you know, this refactory around the back where you secretly make them.
Because it's almost at times you feel
like... Happen whilst you can.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, that's right.
Well, sometimes it feels like we're lying to people. People come in and go, oh, have you got any of this? Have you got any of that? Oh, I heard a rumour you had that Black Flag. Well, yeah, we did, but it's all gone. Oh, yeah, it's all gone. Yeah, you had 24 albums like 2 days ago and they've got... And you're like, yes.
They do.
One guy snapped up eight, another snapped up, and it's just a demand for them.
It's crazy. What kind of records do you, well, when you, what was your first ever record?
First ever record that I bought? I think that was probably Regatta de Blanc by The Police.
Ah,
no, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Another good selling record.
Yeah, definitely.
That was the first record that I actually bought with my own money. I think the first single that I got was... it was either Coco by The Sweet, or the Wombles.
The Wombles.
it was one of those two. I can't remember. My sister got me it.
Oh yeah, sure. Well, both of these choices are less embarrassing than my first record, which was Donny Osmond, A Million to One.
Oh,
my sister probably had that. She liked it.
We do have the power of editing, but also, Bob, you didn't just need to mention it at all.
No. It's part of our quirky appeal.
Well, look, I've got to say, I'm 40, so my first actual vinyl on record, it was a single and it was Starship. I don't know. Yeah, we all remember it. You can build this bridge together, you know, standing strong, forget.
Could have been worse. Could have been worse.
Could have been a hell of a lot worse.
I remember I got one of those. I remember the one that I played the most was actually a song with, it was a charity single, I think, for some kind of nature or something, and it was David Bellamy on it. And do you remember those little wee sheets of plastic that you had to stick 2p on to weigh it down? Do you ever remember those records, which wasn't a record, no? You used to get them free in magazines.
Yeah.
It's like a thin, like a flexi sheet
disc.
Of...
Flexi-disc, that's the one.
Skinny.
Yeah. Well, I thought you meant you having to put 2p on the top of the stylus to keep it on the record.
No, but you had to put 5 2p pieces around the record, so it had stars on the inside of it, just to weigh it down. Because it was just basically like an incredibly... posh piece of Waitrose cling film, you know, but with grooves in it. But it didn't. It literally, if somebody sneezed in the room, it would have wafted off the record player.
Free in smash hits.
Yeah. But that's exactly it. It was. Do you still collect vinyl? Have you got a collection?
I have, yeah. I've got a collection of various stuff, A to Z of various bands. Probably about 1,000 records.
Wow!
I'm a big collector of The Police.
I collect
Police vinyl, so I've got probably about the same amount, about 1,000 records, but they're all mispressings, test pressings, misprints. Oh,
cool. Serious stuff.
That's the real deal.
You would get on very well with a lot of people in our shop.
Oh, I definitely.
Absolutely. That's part of the fun, isn't it?
I love that, going to record shops and flicking through the boxes, you know. I mean, eBay and things have made it so much easier to find stuff. Yeah, you know, I've been looking for records, certain records for years, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's only, you know, years of searching the internet, and they finally crop up, you know, eventually. So
that's a great feeling.
Yeah, there's nothing like going through the record boxes in the record shops, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Do you use Discogs? Do you cog your collection?
I do use that. But not so much crops up on there. Or if it does, it's priced at three times of what it's worth.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, isn't it?
I get a lot of stuff on eBay. I do get the odd thing from Discogs.
And what about charity shops? Do you ever get the pickings are not as rich now?
They're nowhere. The secret's out there. You know, everybody knows about
Everybody's
it.
Everybody's so woken up.
That minefield has been dried out, basically, unfortunately.
I did find a Rolling Stones test press in a charity shop.
Wow.
Oh,
Oh, that's amazing. Result.
It was a massive result. I think I got it for about £3 and I sold it for about £250. So.
Jeez, that's
a winner.
So you never know what you might find.
This is It's still always worth digging, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What song was it? Do you remember?
It was an album. I can't remember what it was now. I think it was the last one that Brian Jones was on.
Okay. So maybe it could have been like Beggar's Banquet or Between the Buttons, perhaps, what before that?
I can't remember what it was called.
Doesn't matter. You found it. Yeah, I don't know.
There's some good profit there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did you ever meet the police at all in your travels?
Yeah, I met Stuart Copeland. I think it's 2007. He did a premiere for his movie Everyone Stares.
Yeah.
And that was he always took his video camera with him when he went on the road. He used to take snippets of footage. So he put together a film called Everyone Stares. So I went to the premiere of that and got to meet him and. He signed all my Clark Kent singles for me and a couple
fantastic.
Of
records. Brilliant. Well, Clark Kent, of course, that was him, wasn't it?
Yeah.
With Chris Spedding on guitar.
Oh, was it really? I've never known that.
Yeah, it was the Police sting, Andy Summers.
Yeah.
And Chris Spedding.
Wow. There you are.
Excellent.
We learn something new every day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I also met Henry Pavidoni, the original Police guitarist who was on the first single, Fallout. He came down and played on the Sex, Drugs and HIV project. So got to hang out with him a bit and he played on one of the tracks.
Brilliant.
Because that's something we obviously want to touch on a little bit later, because honestly, that Sex, Drugs and HIV is literally, it's like a little black phone book of the who's who of the music world. It's impossible for anybody to get all of those. Do you know what's amazing? Amazing is the list of the names, which we will go on to, but it's also incredible. If you said that you'd got an X amount of people, I'm not even going to tell people yet how many people are on it, because they won't believe it and they'll just switch off. But getting that amount of people is one thing. But do you know, the other impressive thing I thought was they weren't even from the same sound of music. You've got people from ska, from heavy hitting rock bands. You've got reggae, you've got pop, you've got people from every sound of music that normally if you stuck five of those people in a bar together, you'd have a brawl. But somehow you managed to pull them together for a really unique reason, a charitable reason. And I haven't watched a lot of the footage. I couldn't see any fights. I don't know how you did it.
Edited them out.
Power of editing. That's exactly it.
So how did that project come about?
Well, I was diagnosed in 1989 with HIV, and the charities that kind of helped me and supported me through those difficult times. I wanted to give something back. So I thought the way that I could give something back is to do what I do, music. And I called my friends and people that I'd met on the road and asked them if they'd like to get involved. And one thing led to another. People said, you should try and so-and-so. They might want to come down and do something. And it kind of snowballed and got bigger and bigger. So what was supposed to be one album ended up being a double album.
Well, that just tells you you probably had more friends than you thought.
Well, I'd like to think so.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, they wouldn't have come out of the woodworks to do this if it wasn't for the right reason with the right person. You know, sometimes you get the right reason, then you've just got the wrong man to deal with and it's just not worth it. You know?
Yeah, I think all the musicians who got involved thought it was a good idea. Yeah. It was all the money is going to charity, and as musicians, we like to do what we can, and what we do is music, and so that's what we did.
Yeah. Can I ask you who was the biggest twat you had to deal with during that time? Then,
well, I had. I had one guy who came down, and he told me that he played for Dire Straits and he'd done all these things with Dire Straits, and so I had no reason to not believe him, really. Uh-huh. So he came down to the studio, did a part, and And then afterwards, I was doing some research. I couldn't find anything on him anywhere, you know.
So he was just blagging it?
Totally blagged it, you know.
Brilliant! Did you leave him on the album?
Well, fortunately, he was the only guy in the studio that day, so it didn't interfere with any of the filming with other musicians on there. So that was kind of lucky, but yeah, that was a weird one.
You've got to give him 10 out of 10 for trying, you know what I mean?
Yeah, nice try.
Too right, man. What about that? Like, were you surprised by anybody you did work with in the opposite way? Were you thinking maybe beforehand, okay, you know, I'm happy to have this guy. He's a great name. He's a great talent. But what I know of him, he might be a bit of an arse. And then he walks in, you get on with the thing. And actually, they were the biggest surprise of being a nice, positive person.
Yeah, I mean, quite a lot of the musicians were like that. I mean, I think if they didn't want to do it, they wouldn't have come to this.
Yeah, totally.
I told them what it was all about. Mm-hmm. It's all going for charity. It's all going to be filmed, and everyone's really up for it. But I mean, some of the people who you wouldn't think to be on a sort of predominantly punk album, like Tony Hadley from South
Bend.
You just wouldn't expect him, but he was such a lovely guy. He was, you know, didn't have his head up his arse, and he was just so easy to work with. What a lovely guy. Brilliant.
Do you know what's really, really quite strange is you're the second person in a week to have said that. Stevie Z Suicide said the exact same thing about him. He said he was one of the absolute loveliest people he's ever met. And I just, out of the people that we're speaking to, you know, I think the Hadleys, either or both of them, would be one of the last names to have come up. But they come up regularly, and they come up really positively as well. I don't know what the deal is with them, but yeah.
Well, I think they were around at the sort of crossover from the punk scene into the new romantic thing. Everyone was sort of still, you know, what are we going to do now, you know? And I've seen quite a few interviews with Spandau Ballet, and they mention Jimmy or Sham 69. Mm-hmm. They had these stories that they tell, and some of those are quite funny. But it just shows you that, you know, that they were around and they were part of that scene, so they all kind of mixed and got on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you can really tell, certainly by watching some of the footage of that. Actually, in watching some of the footage, go and tell me, because Max Splodge, exactly. You see, I didn't say anything. I just mentioned his name and you're already laughing. This is exactly what I mean. Well, so have I. And I just thought, you know, I kind of liked him and he endeared to me a bit. And I enjoyed him. I think this is the word. I really enjoyed him. I enjoyed watching him. I don't know how much I could tolerate being in the same room with him. And I was going to ask you what that was like, because the guy looks like high maintenance, man.
Oh, Max is such a lovely geezer.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been on the road with him quite a few times over the years. I mean, I've been the resident Splodge bass player since 1999. So I've been in the band 22 years, and we've done 6 weeks tours around Europe and weeks around America, Canada, all over the place. And he's so funny. He is funny as hell.
Yeah, he's got some personality.
It's like, you know, my dad used to ask me when he was around, he's, you know, why do you get up to all this mischief on the road, you know? And it's just boredom, really. You know, mm-hmm, you're stuck in a van for hours on end and backstage, and then after the gig you go back to your hotel to grab a couple of hours and sleep, you know, before you're on the road again. It's just kind of an entertainment thing. So we're always playing tricks on each other, and that sort of comes through on the videos, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Would you think, was life on the road what you expected it to be before you started touring?
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, my first tour abroad was with Chelsea, and that was just absolute chaos from the beginning to end. You know, we started off with the 24-hour crossing Harwich to Hamburg. And I don't know how we didn't get arrested when we got off the other range. You know? We were up to all sorts of mischief. But it was, you know, at the time, sometimes these things aren't funny. But when you look back at them, you know, you look back with great fondness, you know.
Yeah.
That's some really happy times.
So when you were going to places like Hamburg, thinking back to musicians before your time, like the Beatles, for instance, would bands like the Beatles had any influence on your generation at the time?
Oh, I guess so. I mean, not so much me, but I guess other people in the band. I mean, Gene, obviously, he was listening to the Beatles when he was starting up. So I think
that's interesting.
Definitely for him. So
were the Beatles maybe kind of less cool for the punks at that point? Because you really kind of weren't trying to latch on to that sound, and you were trying to maybe be a bit more expressive. But again, I'm sorry, everybody. I just have to be honest. You know, this is I'm not a Beatles fan at all. I'm not a fan.
Well, it was nice to meet you.
Bob is a huge diehard fan. Well,
the reason I was asking there was because...
Close the door on your way out.
I now know my place. I'm on the street.
Now, we have a great wind-up about this in the shop all the time, you know. But the reason I ask is because when I was at school and everybody was into punk, I mean, it's the 77, 78, mm-hmm. liking the Beatles was like a bad thing.
And, that's what I was wondering.
And people used to come up to me and say, well, why do you like the Beatles? Why can't you just be different? And so I am the one that's different. I'm the punk. But it was really bad. And then when Susie and the Banshees covered Dear Prudence, or was it Helter Skelter? One of the two.
Yeah, it was Dear Prudence. Yeah, Dear Prudence. It was a great version.
I used to say to people,
it's better than the original, I think.
Oh, well, now, hold on. I think you're absolutely right, though. The original's great, but Susie's version was great. But that's why I was asking, because on the surface, it was like, you shall never mention the Beatles. But underneath, a lot of these musicians were actually appreciating that, not just the Beatles, but that previous era.
Yeah, I mean, the thing you've got to remember is 1976, 77, when the punk thing was happening. I mean, Jimi Hendrix died in 1970.
Yeah.
Beatles split up in 1970. So it was
still fresh.
It was over, you know. So we're looking for new things to come in, you know.
Yeah. And
all these sort of manufactured pop bands at the time, you know, the basic role is being the main one.
Yeah.
We're just getting sick and tired of this manufactured record company bullshit, you know, a bit like it is today.
Exactly.
It goes full circle, like most things, doesn't it? But
that's right.
We are right back there where they're just being manufactured and produced.
It was interesting as well, a lot of these punk guys came from pub rock bands, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah. The Feel Goods. You know, was it the, where were they? Canvey Island, were they from?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, the pop rock band. I mean, that's the Lurkers. All these kind of bands. They started off on the circuit, and you know, some of them managed to break through into the mainstream and chart, and the rest of them just carried on the circuit. You know, we still play the circuits.
Yeah.
See, it's an interesting point you put. I hope you don't mind, but I'm just going to touch on this and see what your opinion on this. So, I mean, if you look at Chelsea, do you feel that Chelsea was maybe a bit of a stepping stone for other musicians? Because if you look at the vast amount of names of people that went through the band Chelsea and then went off to do completely different things, other things, and some would say maybe bigger and diverse things. I mean, it was almost like that Chelsea was an initiation band. And if you didn't do your time in Chelsea, you weren't worth going on and having a second career afterwards. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think a lot of people have come and gone from Chelsea over the years. And it's, some people say it's like the John Mayall's blues band.
That's it.
And as you might know, Billy Idol, Tony James, they were the band at the beginning, and they went off and did Generation X, which went on to 6 Sputnik, and Sting was from the Police. I think he was in the charts at the time when Sting was depping for for Chelsea.
Ah, well,
who else? Wow. Members of CronGen. There's been lots of us.
Yeah.
Chelsea was absolutely essential.
I've been back two or three times.
Go back to the well.
It's a bit like a jail then, basically. Is that what you're saying? You have to keep going back to do your time again. Magic. So who's your favourite band of all time?
I think my favourite band of all time has to be The Police. Yeah. I mean, I started listening to them in 78, 79. And I listened to nothing else for a couple of years until I started playing with other bands, other musicians, sorry, and they sort of introduced me to their music.
Yeah.
But I still collect The Police records, and I still love their music. So
yeah,
that has to be my all-time band. But I mean, I do love other bands as well, like Led Zeppelin, the UK subs. Kate Bush.
Absolutely.
Mac, all sorts of weird stuff, you know, that you wouldn't think a punk rocker would be like.
Well, but that's interesting in itself, because we have this discussion in the shop all the time, don't we? Mm-hmm. We get so many people from different musical tastes coming in.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we were growing up, I'm slightly older than Lee by a couple of months.
I hope it shows.
My friends say I don't look 55, but I used to.
Hey, when you were 58, you did.
I had to get that joke in. I only use it once a week. But the thing was, nowadays, you can like Fleetwood Mac, mm-hmm. Led Zeppelin, Kate Bush, UK Subs, Chelsea, Stranglers, the Beatles.
Yeah.
Some people who like, you see some of our customers on Facebook, and they're almost putting up what they're playing now, and they take a photograph of the record player and the record. And so many times you see guys I know into serious death metal, and suddenly they're playing next up Kate Bush. And
Madonna,
I love that, because back in my day, it was all so tribal that you couldn't like one bunch of things and like another bunch of things. It was very binary. Mm-hmm. Do you remember all that?
Yeah, well, I think the thing about being in the punk thing, it's about being an individual, you know, mm-hmm. and doing your own thing. And if you like a song by a band that's not a punk band, then so what? You know, it's...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Donny Osmond, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? You know, it's a very personal thing, music, you know, and two punk rockers would not like the same punk songs. So mm-hmm. It's going to be different all along the board.
See, yeah. I think a huge part of it is you don't actually have a choice. I know personally, I've really wanted to love an album. Well, I won't waste the time going in for whatever reason. I'm like, I want to love that. I'm going to stick it on. And you listen and you go, that's shite. But I tell you what, I'll listen to it again. I'll listen to that again. I'll listen to it the weekend. I tell you what, I'll listen to it with my missus. And you just can't get, and you start lying. You start like, you're
hoping it's
really
going to grow
good
on you.
Oh, you're listening to it. You get the meaning behind this, and still, some part inside your head's going,
it's not happening.
Nah, man, it's not working. Yeah. But then that's what I mean in the opposite as well. I don't think you can help. You know, humming along or grooving along to me. You might be doing the dishes, and there's a bloody advert on, and it's a song written for the advert. I'm not talking about a quality tune, but you can't help but get the groove on and bounce
a little
along
jingle.
With it.
Yeah,
and then you get these really rubbish, cheesy, nasty songs that won't forgive your brain, you know, they won't relent. And I just wonder, like, how much do we decide what we actually like or don't? Admitting to it is one thing, but how much we actually like it is a total other one. Bob, I really want to love the Beatles, but I can't do it, man. I can't do it. If Paul McCartney was never in the Beatles, we'd have a different conversation. But so I don't know how you feel about that. Do you think you're in control of your listening choices, or do you think you're not in control of some of the ones?
Well, definitely, you're in control in your own home. You know, you can play what you want. You play your own records or whatever. But
it doesn't mean that you like what you play.
Well, if there's something I don't like, I don't play it.
Fair enough.
I think it's just stuff like the TV, the radio, online. They choose what you're going to listen to. That's what I hate about the music industry now. You're kind of forced to listen to certain styles of music that you, mm-hmm. you might not really like, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't really like. I think it should be, you know, I think it should be lots of different variations in there, not just one or a few sets of styles of music. You know, it should be all along the board, really.
Well, there's so many platforms now, isn't there, that kids today can really hear a whole bunch of wildly different things like Spotify or iTunes. Yeah. And hopefully these will be introductions to records, for
yes,
example.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But at least it gives them, they're not restricted to just a DJ and Radio 1, for example, anymore.
Exactly. I mean, that was another thing with the Sex, Drugs and HIV project. It was hopefully it'll introduce people to some bands that they never heard of before and go, yeah. Oh, wow. These guys are good. I'll check out what albums they've done and hopefully turn them on to something new.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What other musicians were in that on that record?
Right, okay, stop clock set. You've got 2 hours on you go. See if you can reel them off in that. I mean, it's crazy. And there is nobody to call them off except you. So why don't you talk a wee bit about your favourite ones or all of them or whatever? I mean, it's just an incredible list of names.
It is. I mean, there's I think 215 musicians were on the album.
That's amazing.
That's way too many to mention. You know, the sessions were just unbelievable. I mean, I was so taken back that the musicians came down and played the songs and they were all good as gold, you know, and I loved that. And there's no bad feelings in the studio at all. I can't remember what I was talking about now.
We're asking who's on that record.
Yeah, so too many people to mention.
There really is.
I mean, there's a massive long list on the website, so you can go and check that out.
What's your website?
Sexdrugsandhiv.com.
Perfect.
And there's an artist roster there of everyone who played on there.
Excellent.
But yeah, I mean, there's certain things that stick out in my mind that I'll never forget, and of course, because of the video, it's great. Yeah. It's all there.
Good. We shall certainly
again. You know, just some of the crazy, you know, blends that you're like the people that you've taken from bands. I'm not going to go through them all because I can't. But like from Iron Maiden,
you were trying to get me to do it, weren't you?
Well, I am quite lazy, but and I hope you've seen through my strategy there. But yes, that's exactly what it was. But it almost on paper kind of even doesn't make sense, and that's what's so impressive about it. You've got people from Iron Maiden, from Madness, The Smiths, Yardbird, Special, Soft Cell, Curved Ear, Die Toten Hosen, Nine Below Zero, I mean, Hawkwind, Girls School, X-Ray Specs, Judge Dredd, The Fall. It goes on forever. And as I was saying earlier, it's not even the individuals. It's like, how, when you start to explain, oh yeah, I've got such and such from this band, and then you get on the phone to Afrika Bambaataa and say, yeah, I've got somebody from Iron Maiden and the Madness. And one of them, he's probably going, Iron Maiden, well, that's not my bag. Madness, I might never have heard about. What? And who are you? And what is going on? Afrika Bambaataa. And all these, it's just a mad blend of all these people that, unless they were all in prison and trying to get a reason to get out early, I can't see why they would have done this together. It really is so impressive.
It's very impressive.
Well, maybe when they read the list, the curiosity got the better of them and thought, I've got to go down and check what's going on here, you know.
That's it.
But it was great getting the, you know, for example, trying to get Captain Sensible to do a reggae song. You know, it's like, you know, he just didn't have the feel for it. So he's on a punk song. But yeah, just trying to get people out of their own comfort zones, you know, getting punk musicians to play on the heavy metal songs or a metal guitarist trying to play a reggae song. It was, that was quite fun.
That's so brilliant. Entertaining to watch as well.
That's brilliant.
Who, in your opinion, was the greatest musician that you got on there? Not who you liked most, nothing about personal. Who was the most talented musician, in your opinion, you got on that album? Besides your good self, of course, Matt.
Talented musician? Oh, that's a difficult one.
Because you've got a good few on there that I was aware of who they were, and I've heard some of the bands that were in and some of the songs, but there was one or two when I'm sitting and I'm going, man, that guy's like, got it all together. He's got it all going on. You know, I won't mention it because I want to hear what you've got first.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, some of the musicians really surprised me when they turned. It's like JC from the guitarist from the Members. You know, you think, oh, you're a great guitarist, but when he turns up and plays the accordion and mandolin, then it's wow. sort of,
all of a sudden he becomes a fully fledged musician.
We could use that in a different song.
Yeah, yeah. Because I also
I was going to say another guy, Rowley Wynn, who was the bass player in the Osric Tentacles. He was just such a talented guy. He's no longer with us now, but he could just pick anything up and just get a tune out of it. You know, balalaikas, mandolins, sitars. He was so talented.
Brilliant.
I did really enjoy it. I was watching Boz strumming away on his guitar, Boz Boerer, and. At one point, he's doing the recording. He's slouched so deep in this awkward position onto a sofa, like really slamming it out and all the rest, getting these incredible noises. And it was later after a comment he made, and he made it so calm, casual and cockily. He's like, oh, yeah, well, this guitar used to belong to such and such. And then it went to Jimmy Page and, now it's mine. and he's sat, he's like sunken into the sofa, half falling asleep. And I was like, do you know what? You might not even be a great musician. That might be Jimmy Page that's channeled through the guitar that's spouted out just like, because he really was hardly trying, but man, he was getting some crazy sounds out of it.
Stuart Osborne from the Guanabats.
Was it?
He did play on the same song as Boz.
Oh, right. Sorry. My bad. My mistake. Yeah.
Well, so many people to choose from.
Well, exactly. I mean, there's just so many people. Yeah,
I get confused sometimes.
Yeah, I bet you. I bet you do.
But that was a great achievement to get that. That must make you really proud.
Yeah. And on that track, which is called Who's Laughing Now?
Oh, brilliant.
Paul Fenwick, who sang it, actually re-recorded it not so long ago.
Oh, really?
So that was and I only heard it a few weeks ago for the first time. I didn't even know it existed. And I was really blown away by it. I thought, wow, you know, what an honour.
Nice, yeah, awesome voice for it as well. Yeah.
So in terms of songs, what song would you say has made you proudest in your career to have played? Being part of creating it or just playing it?
Well, on the HIV album?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Well, on the HIV, I mean, there's quite a few. I mean, Hours and Expenses has become a real kind of anthem for the project.
Yeah, yeah.
But one of the later songs I recorded with Sonny Christina from Curved Air singing called You Take Me Higher.
Yeah.
It was almost like two songs rolled into one because there's a nice kind of long intro and then the song kicks in. And I really loved the way the song worked. You know, it's very kind of mellow and then it kind of rocks out.
Yeah.
So I was really proud of that one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good for you. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a brilliant stuff.
It really is.
I'm so glad dedicated vinyl fans will be seeking this out. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, it's a must.
Absolutely.
Actually, if you read a lot of the reviews, that's one of the things that a lot of people say about it. It's an essential piece to own. It's a must have. It's a must buy. It's a must listen. And it's not easy to get a hold of. You know, they must have sold pretty well because they're now highly in demand.
Well, I mean, I just wanted to do a limited run. I mean, people have asked me, why didn't you stream them? You know, why didn't you do them on Vimeo or whatever? And, you know, being a musician, you know, you like to have a physical hard copy to hold in your hand. You know, if it's in the cloud or somewhere, it
definitely
almost doesn't exist, you know. So I wanted to do a limited run of a physical copy. So so that's it. If you're lucky enough to get one, then enjoy it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's already been aired on London Live TV once, I think, and they're going to planning on showing it again or some of the episodes. So so it's getting out there. I mean, the main thing is just to get the word out about the project and spread awareness.
Yeah,
we'll certainly be doing that.
Absolutely.
And to a very receptive audience as well, because many of the names there are the kind of names that people come in and ask for.
Yeah.
In our shop. So,
well, I mean, it's almost a different situation that you're dealing with as well. If you think that you started that, well, effectively almost about 20 years ago, you look from 20 years ago to where we are today, you've got far more resources. We've got far more adapted minds. We're a lot more open-minded. We're a lot more receptive to these things. And I think we're slowly shaving the stigma off of a lot of things that were really taboo 10, 20 or 30 years ago, things you couldn't even talk about. Now we're being encouraged to talk about them, and there's portals, there's online presence, there's social media for people to come together and talk about. Obviously, most recently, I think the one that's being highly destigmatized is mental health and mental illness, you know, whereas before or decades before, talking about that was a real sign of weakness. Whereas actually, well, do you live? Do you breathe? Do you have blood in your body? So if you're a human being, you have a physical state of well-being, which is your health. Well, if you've got a brain in your head, you've got a state of mental health. It's as simple as we've all got mental health. Just because your brain doesn't sneeze, it doesn't mean that it's not unhealthy or unhappy, yeah. You know? So yeah. It's destigmatizing these things. And certainly now I think AIDS, HIV, it's got so much more resort. But 20 years ago, even just 20 years ago, we couldn't Google to find certain things out. We couldn't find the information out without going to a direct source that we didn't even know who or where the source was back then. So it's definitely, you're in a far better position to get that word spread out now, and there's more information about it. And I think more people are willing and happy to talk about it, exactly. Understand it, and really receive it positively, not have a taboo stigma type thing around it anymore, you know? I don't know how you feel. Do you feel that's right or wrong?
Well, I mean, the stigma still remains with HIV and AIDS. I mean, there's still a million people a year die of AIDS. You know? And the thing is, if you still mention HIV or AIDS, you know, people still flinch, you know. And, you know, I had problems with the title of the album, Sex, Drugs and HIV, because it's in your face, you know.
It's punchy, yeah.
And,
That's the way yeah. a punk. That's the way a punk would have
that's,
done it.
That's how it should be.
Well, that was the way it was created in the first place. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Sex, drugs, and HIV.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
the music is the rock and roll. So
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the stigma still remains. You know, it's a little bit better. I mean, there's like you say, there's access to the internet now, which people just didn't have then. And I remember, you know, when I started the project in 1995, Dave Goodman, the producer, he was very techie, and you know, he was telling me about, you know, in a couple of years' time we're going to be having video call, telephone calls, and we're all going to have a page on the internet, and we're going, yeah, all right, Dave, you know, you're talking futuristic, you know, and,
yeah.
Star Trek.
A few years later, you know, we're all on Skype, and there's web pages for this and that. So he was a real visionary, you know.
Yeah, it takes but now again, when we look at our phones and I do like a FaceTime to my wife, it always reminds me of Star Trek, when it was like they used to go like this, you know, and then they shake it and then speak.
Captain's
you know?
Log. Well, but there's a theory in that, actually. There's a theory behind it. It's the whatever you want to call it. It's the question of, have we created the world that we fabricated like 30 years ago today? So if we look back at whatever, Star Trek or a Back to the Future or some of these movies, and you're like, oh, wow, look at that. That's so cool. Right. How old were you? You were about 12, weren't you? You were at the peak of your prime of your creative prowess, and you were dreaming as big as you ever could. And when you got older and you were 32 and you were in this office job, what did you design? Oh, yeah, time-traveling car, yeah? Okay, great. So now we've got them and we can go out and buy all these things that didn't exist. You know, you can actually buy a hoverboard nowadays, about £2,500. exactly like the skateboard in Back to the Future, that exists. Those trainers, the Nikes, they exist. We've got flying cars. Yeah. We've basically
not in Aberdeen.
Not in Aberdeen. No, no, no. We've got Captain's Log right here.
Yeah,
Captain's all of Log, these things yeah. have actually yeah. they came at one point out of fantasizing the future, but then there's a point where the next generation came in and they created that future. So what we're doing is we're almost living in a huge part. Like 85% of the world we live in now was fabricated or fantasized during the 60s, 70s, and 80s. That's and true. That's the world we're actually living in now.
Well, it was another thing that Dave Goodman was saying was, you know, we're going to have these computer games, you know, eventually where you can have, yeah, we're going to have play drums. We'll have John Bonham. So you program in John Bonham and he plays the drum tracks or the drum feel.
Yeah.
And who we're going to have on vocals? Let's get John Lennon. Get John Lennon on there and program him in, and then maybe Dolly Parton on backing vocals or whatever.
Oh.
And it, I mean, we're not that far from that. It's probably happening now, you know.
Yeah,
you
can
just
true.
Choose who you want on your song.
That's a great question. What would be your ideal band then? Oh. If you could create that, who would be in your band?
Well, I did a couple of those on the project, you know.
Of course, yeah.
Of course.
But I mean the Rock and Roll Gypsies was the HRV project band is a kind of similar thing. It's like who would I like to be in the band?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an ever changing lineup, so we have different musicians, but it's great to have those elements. The musicians bring in their qualities and play the song slightly differently, you know, to how it was on the record. And, you know, I love that.
No, that's absolutely. It just shows the song's got a life beyond its initial birth, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So if all the songs that you've, like, performed with, if you look back at the old days, like Chelsea, for example, is there any songs from that era that stick in your mind as ones that you are very pleased that you were part of?
Well, I think my first Chelsea album, The Alternative.
Yeah.
I think I was really, really proud to have played on my first album. And
of course.
Gene let me sing one of the songs, More Than a Gyro, so I was doubly pleased with that.
More Than a Gyro.
The whole production and the way it was recorded, we spent 2 weeks in Stafford recording it in Blue Chip Studio.
Yeah,
and the record company puts up in the hotel, and we just lived it. And again, Dave Goodman was producing, and I was really proud of really proud of that record.
So 2 weeks is quite a quick time to make a record, isn't it?
It's usual, you know, to do an album. I mean, beforehand when we rehearse, you know, we write the songs that first, demo them. And then we'd take them to the rehearsal studio and rehearse them for 6 weeks before we go in the studio. So we knew what we were doing. We're not wasting time in the studio.
Absolutely. We've all been there.
Yeah. And then, you know, you give it a couple of weeks after you've recorded it, after you've done the rough mixes, and then go in and do another mix.
Yeah. Gives you a chance to listen to it and...
Spot the mistakes,
absolutely. I'm sure there was very few of these.
You got any standout favourite moments of that time then?
Oh, The Alternative.
Yeah.
When we were recording, I know that the sound engineer lost the plot. I mean, I don't know if we had anything to do with that. on the last day of the recording, I think the engineer had wigged out and there was toothpaste all over the studio. And, I don't know what had been going on, but I remember that.
Oh, man. Poor guy.
And the alternative tour, of course, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, some mental times. But I've just done. I've been editing some tour footage up over the lockdown.
Oh yeah.
That I had a video camera with me used to take it on the road.
Yeah.
I had all this old footage lying around of. So I've just chopped it all up and put the album as soundtrack and this sort of incidents in between the songs, you know, in the hotel rooms or in the van or whatever. So yeah, I really enjoy putting those.
That
together.
Sounds brilliant.
That does,
doesn't it?
But where you say you've put that up, or is that still to go up somewhere?
Yeah, I put them up on YouTube.
That's up on YouTube.
Yeah, I've done a couple for Chelsea, Tour Diaries, and there's the Tour Diaries.
It's about an hour, isn't it, that one?
Yeah, they usually they're about an hour, because I probably use about 5 or 6 tapes on a 2 or 3 week tour. And then once you've condensed that down, you've probably got about 2.5 hours of usable stuff, and then you have to squeeze that down again into a sort of bite-sized chunk for people to digest.
You know, Matt, you do shoot yourself in the foot. Like, I'm glad it's a camcorder you've been carrying in your hand and not a gun, because you are trigger happy, mate, when it comes to filming. Seriously, man, the amount of footage
I'm relentless. I am relentless. Yeah. I mean, that's the way you capture the gems, you know.
That's it. I mean, if you got caught with that footage nowadays, you know, different questions might be raised if it wasn't of that footage. But it's just, you're just constantly on record. It's brilliant, because that's when you catch those moments of gold. And you just see a real personal insight to somebody, you know, which I think is brilliant.
Where can we see this?
Well, everything I've seen, most of it was all on YouTube. There's a hell of a lot on YouTube.
I put them all up on my channel on YouTube.
It's on your channel on YouTube.
And it's brilliant stuff, and like priceless.
Is that just your name and your channel?
I think it's called Matt Sarge.
Matt Sarge.
On YouTube. And there's quite a few tour diaries on there.
Yeah, I suspect a few people after this podcast might see the viewing figures going up a bit.
They're highly, highly entertaining, guys. Anybody not going to watch one is missing out. It's as simple as that,
But that's the kind of fly in the wall stuff you really want, especially that nostalgic element of back in the day as well. You know, a chance to look at it with fresh eyes.
Definitely.
Sounds great. I'm going to look at that.
No, it's worth a watch, definitely. Absolutely. Have you got any other like standout stories of anybody in particular, like anyone that sort of like, just one of those big stories that you're like, do you know what? If there's anything I won't forget, I won't remember that. That was so funny or so touching or something.
Well, I mean, when Brian Robertson from Thin Lizzy and Wurzel from Motorhead turned up in the studio, I mean, they were just such a double act. I mean, they were best buddies and it was just brilliant seeing them together. You know, I mean, as the day went on, you know, and the Guinnesses were flying around and God knows what else, you know, and it was just, I mean, it's all captured on the films, but that was a really enjoyable day for me. And I think Brian Robertson, or Robbo as we call him, he kind of had a music block, you know, and there's this pack of cards that Brian Eno had invented called Oblique Strategies. And I think there's about 70 cards in the deck or something. And then you just pick a card out from the deck and it tells you, it's to help musicians get over writer's block.
Right.
So yeah, we kind of used the cards in the studio, but
did it work?
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Brilliant. That's interesting.
I think,
that deck of cards himself.
Brian Eno did. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so Dave Goodman had a set in the studio. So if we had any musicians that were kind of like, don't know what to do next, you know, Dave would say, pick a card, you know.
So is Brian Eno going around to all the bands that you had the least faith in and saying, here's a deck of cards to play with or something?
Yeah, I've seen them advertised online. A couple of people recently have said, I've just got myself a pack of these.
Yeah. Logic.
We could all do it.
I'll see if I can track a set down. Definitely.
I
know that you've got a cracking story about a certain Charlie Harper and bizarrely an orb. Now, you know instantly where this has come from. It's come from a shared source here, our good friend Mike. Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about this?
Yeah, well, whilst we were recording in the studio, I mean, I'd recorded with Dave Goodman before, obviously with Chelsea and the Alternative up in Stafford, and we did the second album, my second album with them, called Traitor's Gate, in Dave's studio, which is where I did started the HIV project. And Dave had often said that he'd walked past the studio and heard ghosts in the basement where the studio was. He said, oh, that was really weird. So I just walked past the top of the studio and I could hear all these kiddies' voices singing, Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer, dude. So we just thought, oh, yeah, you smoked too much spliff again, you know. But it wasn't until probably 10, 15 years later, after I started editing the footage up for the documentaries, that I noticed these orbs in the studio, and it only happened twice. Once when Wally Pistol, the original Sex Pistol guitarist, was in the studio, and the other time was with Charlie Harper. And the Charlie one was more apparent. You could actually see the orbs flying around quite a lot. And if you believe anything, if you believe those sort of things, it started interfering with the camera as well. So the camera started getting sort of static noises on there. But yeah, that's all captured on one of the films.
Wow. Wow.
On the song Gone So Long.
Did anyone ever get to the bottom of who was doing the singing, or was it still disembodied voices?
Well, there was no one in the studio. That was a thing.
Wow.
But I mean, Dave had kind of like a free, it was like an open house, his place. You know, we had musicians from Japan all over the place just coming in, and they'd be either up in the attic in Studio 3 doing some demos or some voiceovers or weird instruments, or they'd be down in the basement. So you never knew what would be going on. So
yeah.
So you didn't know if there's people recording, but yeah, on those times there wasn't anyone in the studio.
Wow, that's really interesting. That's so it sounds crazy. Like a fascinating scene as well.
Yeah, like, yeah, definitely.
A drop-in center for musicians, and that just sounds great.
Oh yeah, it was. Yeah.
I mean, it looks basically just like you've said. Right, here's the address, guys. There's an after party. And people just, there's this constant slow stream of one famous face after another famous face after another, and it doesn't end. It just doesn't end.
In fact, I mean, one story we had was when Tony Hadley was in the studio doing some vocals. At the time, there was a suspected murderer living over the road from Dave's house. So Dave had these surveillance guys in his bedroom with the binoculars looking out the window, surveying this house over the road. And David had answered the door to this guy, one of the policemen, and he came in and he could hear the music going on in the basement. And the guy went, "Wow, he said, that really sounds like Tony Hadley from Spandau Ballet." Dave kind of raised his eyebrows and went, "Follow me." he took him down at the studio and he pulled back the curtain, and there was Tony Hadley sitting.
How confused was the guy?
He said, "Oh," he said, "I've got to have a photograph." He says, "My missus will never believe this."
Luckily they had the surveillance equipment to get that photograph.
Yeah. Oh, it's magic.
Brilliant. Love it. Do you ever remember a particular gig? Is there a gig that comes to mind as being a particularly great one or enjoyable one?
Quite a few. I mean, I'd say on the alternative tour, I think we played a place called the Knack Club in Berlin.
Ooh.
And that was just absolutely ramo. And we've been on the road for hours getting to this gig, and you never know whether there's going to be 50 people and a couple of dogs, you know, or there's going to be 1,000 people there or whatever. So we turned up. We thought, there's probably going to maybe a couple of hundred people turn up, but it was absolutely rammed, you know. And
brilliant.
It was like Beatlemania as well, you know. People knew our names. Wow. You know, they were screaming our names and throwing various bits of clothing on the stage. And so that was quite memorable. Yeah, it's like it was like a Beatlemania. Yeah,
that's
fantastic. And did the gig go well in terms of the music?
I wouldn't say it went down well. it kind of got a bit rowdy. It got a bit over rowdy. I mean, this guy was at the front of the stage and he kept jumping up and grabbing hold of my fucking bollocks. And it was only a small stage, so there wasn't many places to go. So I kept pointing to him and say, don't do that. You know?
You're the most polite punk ever. Please keep your reins off me bollocks. That's magic.
Do you mind? No, so I gave him a warning, you know, as you do. And the third time he did it, I ended up taking my bass off and I did a Sid and clumped him over the head with it. These bouncers came and dragged him out, and I think there was a bit of a riot after the gig. So I don't know whether we've incited that or not, but
that's
all very memorable anyway.
Absolutely. Oh, you need memories like that.
That's fantastic. Oh my God.
I say, man. Would you mind taking your hand off my box?
That is fantastic. The kindest, friendliest morning ever. It's amazing. Nobody else would do that nowadays, you know, if your hands chopped straight off.
Oh, well, he was German. Maybe he didn't understand me. And maybe.
Or maybe you didn't understand his intentions, man. We don't know.
Nowadays, people pay good money for that.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic.
Oh, man.
Brilliant stuff.
Matt, is there anything else you've got? Anything else you want to go over just now?
I don't think so. Is there anything else you want to ask me?
There is one question I like to ask everybody that comes on here, because at the moment, we kind of don't exist. We're starting this, and we've started this new project that we're working on, which is the podcast, which as anybody listening to this now, it does exist. Don't worry, you have already heard several episodes. You're not going mad, you know. But to this point where we're pulling it all together, we don't exist. We don't have anything that somebody maybe like yourself can say, do you know what? Let me scope out these guys first. Let me listen to the quality. Let me
just
listen
as
to
well.
Whatever. Exactly. Don't tell them what's really going on. but this is it. And we find it so interesting why we're offering you as bugger all. There's no money involved. There's no reference for you to check what we've done or anything. But we've got this incredible amount of people that have agreed to do it. And I feel, and certainly for yourself, that this is a bit of a Johnny Pato moment where the only reason you're on here for free is because you're a musician, you know? I just find it really fascinating. So,
well, I mean,
from your point.
The thing was, you know, when I got the call to ask to do this show, uh-huh. I mean, the week before, I'd been offered to do another radio show, and it was an hour of waffle, and the interviewer was kind of like, he sounded like Mr. Burns from The Simpsons. Yes. And it was just very boring and flat, and I just thought, people who want to learn about music or they want to learn about me or whatever, mm-hmm. they're not really going to get it from this guy because he's not going to ask the right sort of questions or he's not going to get a vibe, you know. I had a quick chat with you, Lee, before
that's
the show,
right.
A couple of days ago, and and we just hit it off straight away, and I can talk to this guy, you know. He's down to earth, and he's one of my kind of people, so.
Well, it's nice to hear.
I think that's something that Bob and I were sort of talking about as well. It's like, and I tread cautiously here, I don't mean that absolutely everybody is forgiven and welcome, but we don't know. It's like, what was it we ended up saying? It's like guns off on entry. When you come into the shop, you de-sling, the belt comes off, and you leave the guns outside. It doesn't matter what you are. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what you're into. It doesn't matter what your political beliefs or stances are. We don't want to hear about them. We're not talking about it.
It's just all about the
music. Is your safety zone. You're not coming here as a person. It's not your professional character that's showing up for anything. Do you know what? Your soul's just going on a wee jaunt. And your soul comes into the shop. And this is where it comes, where you're free of everything and nobody judges you.
That's exactly what we...
brilliant, man. I love that. You know?
That's my records.
Subliminal underneath every second of the chat.
Pretty much. But it's just one of those... It's like, I don't know. We've seen every colour of the rainbow walk into the place. We've seen every kind of attitude coming. I've seen somebody coming in before and I thought they were going to stab me and smash the place up, and you end up getting a hug and they leave with 9 records under and their wallet's been emptied, you know, they're broke for the rest of the month.
Never know, do you?
And they skip out the door happy. And you're like, we just robbed them and they're happy.
Best prices, folks. Best prices.
People that know, they know. But it's just, it's
like a hub for.
Yeah.
It's like yourself there and all of us. It's very much a music shop is somewhere where you come in and everybody's on the same page, really.
No. Well, it's like you say, you know, you'd running a music shop and you a punk rocker turns up and you'd expect him to want to buy the latest releases, you know, and he'll probably walk out the door after a browse not buying anything. Whereas mm-hmm. you get this kind of like office dude walks in and he goes, oh, great stuff, you know, I'll have that. Have you got anything new? And like you say, he ends up walking out the door with seven records under his arm.
Yeah,
well,
that's
it. You just don't know who's out there and what they listen
exactly.
to.
Exactly. You know? And we've got one of our most prolific punk fans is a former policeman. He just recently retired. He's buying all these crazy Sham 60. He's buying everything he can get his hands on, and he knows his stuff. You know, uh-huh. the vibrators. He's deep into it. You know,
I think the only thing he had in common with the punk scene would be being a policeman was the boots, and that's about it. You know, but it's nice to see that taste is there. It's absolutely. Brilliant.
So, what are you up to now these days?
Any upcoming projects or plans
at the moment? What am I doing? Well, apart from going to the dentist. like I say, I've been editing some films at home, Tour Diaries.
That's great.
And getting the artwork and at the end of last year, getting the artwork and the master and everything ready for the release of the DVDs and recording the new Chelsea album.
When's that coming out?
Well, it's due for release in May.
Oh wow! Okay.
We were supposed to go in the studio in March this year, but obviously that
got
postponed. That took about 4 or 5 months longer.
Yeah.
And then, like we were saying earlier, you usually have a bit of time off before you go into mix. But, so we did that. We were just about to go in and mix it, and the second lockdown happened. Oh, so we had to wait until December to mix it. But now we've got it back and we're all happy with it, and the artwork's all done. Just got the message back from the record company today saying it's all ready to go for May. So
fantastic,
magic!
That's a great exclusive.
Please tell me that
coming straight out on vinyl, is it?
Fantastic!
It's coming out on vinyl and CD.
Wow, fantastic. Happy days!
That's all we need to know.
Yeah,
blue vinyl.
Blue vinyl.
Chelsea blue.
Of course it is.
Well, we'll have to have a few copies of that.
Definitely.
Sure.
Yeah,
definitely.
Meanwhile Gardens, it's called.
Meanwhile Gardens.
Yeah.
Meanwhile Gardens.
Excellent
Fantastic.
Stuff.
Fantastic. That's great.
Cool.
Well, we'll look forward to spinning that.
Nice one.
All right, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Matt, total delight, buddy. A total delight. I feel we got a fantastic interview and we've made a friend as well today. So,
all sounds good.
I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope we haven't, you know, missed anything out. If there is, you can still
we'll
add
have to
it.
Do it again.
Or another one. Even better. We'll do it again, my man. Absolutely. That sounds like a plan.
That's brilliant.
Great stuff. Well, thanks for having me on the show, guys. And it's been nice to chat to you and everyone out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. No, it's brilliant. Been a delight having you. And we wish you nothing but the very, very best. And hopefully we'll have your album in the shop definitely very soon. And hopefully we'll see you up in these neck of the woods
perfect.
Very, very soon too.
Yeah,
in person.
Excellent.
That'd be awesome.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, my friend.
All right, guys. Lovely.
Right,
thanks,
Matt.
For having
me. See you later, cheers, guys. Cheers, Matt. All the best.
Bye-bye,
Matt.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Wow, I never thought when I opened up a record shop in Aberdeen that we'd be doing a podcast with great people like Lee, and engineered superbly as always by Ross the Boss. I never thought we'd be having somebody from Sham 69 talking away to them like they were old friends, and that's really the way Matt's came across, and I just absolutely loved doing that podcast.
You're absolutely bang on. If there's something I think we came away with by having that wonderful chat with Matt today, I think we've come away with a friend, a new friend. What a heart. What a guy, what a soul, what a committed person. Honestly, truly inspiring. Love the guy, love him to bits.
I thought it was great as well listening to him, having that passion for record collecting, which we all recognise. And he's going after all the Police records and everything. Makes a difference from the Police coming after us.
Absolutely. If you're going to see a flip around, it's that way preferred, that's for sure. You're right, the guy was just dripping with passion. He was beaming the whole time. I mean, there's only one thing I probably wouldn't risk myself putting into myself in a situation with that, and that's maybe getting a haircut from him. Apart from that, the guy's just gold. Gold.
No, it was great. Really enjoyed that. I hope you guys did too. And don't forget to let us know how you thought about it and what your favourite bits were. And by all means, listen to us on all the usual platforms. Subscribe and all the rest of it. Do whatever you like. But most importantly, just keep enjoying the show and listening to your music. And on that note, from me, it's a wax on,
wax off.